Tax season is here, and most employers are required by the IRS to file information returns. An information return is a mandatory form, such as a 1099 NEC or a W-2, that is used to notify the IRS and taxpayers about taxable income. E-File 4Biz makes it easy to file and deliver 1099 and W-2 forms online. Their easy-to-use interface helps you file forms in just minutes. You can enter your data manually or import from Excel, QuickBooks, and Xero. Enter your data and E-File 4Biz processes, prints, mails, and files 1099 and W-2s for you. Easy! Get all-inclusive E-File services quickly, efficiently, and securely with E-File 4Biz today. It is free to try. Only pay when you're ready to file. Visit now, www.efileforbiz.com. That is the letter E, the word file, the number 4, and biz with a Z as in zebra, .com.
And I would also say further down the extroverted spectrum, because right. Let's say a lot of extroverts really struggle with things like active listening and empathy. These are, you know, introverted specialities. It's like our advantage. The difference is that what I find is extroverts will realize that they have those disadvantages and they'll go and do training to get better at it. Or HR in an organization will see that they struggle with those things and send them to training. But with introverts, especially the ones that are further down that spectrum, it's like, oh, they're an introvert. They're never going to be able to do that. So, you know, we just have to deal with that.
In today's interview, I sat down with Matthew Pollard. He's the author of The Introvert's Edge and a new variant of that called The Introvert's Edge for Networking. And you can check out his stuff at introvertsedge.com or theintrovertsedge.com. God, it's the most times I've ever said introvert's edge together. Why don't we listen in? We'll have a discussion and then maybe I'll recover my tongue and I can pronounce it correctly. Yeah. Well, okay. So let's get into it. I want to talk about introversion. So let me ask you with this, do you qualify yourself as an introvert and where are you on is it the spectrum? Is that the word to use?
Well, you know, so I think that psychologists make it way too confusing. I think that, you know, you're either introverted or you're extroverted. I hear people talk about all the time, oh, I used to be introverted, now I'm more extroverted. And, you know, it's really about where you draw your energy from, the way I see it. I mean, I've done back-to-back interviews like this today, and I was just talking to my wife downstairs that I am ecstatic that this is my last one because I am wiped. However, if I was sitting down in front of my laptop and just working away, I'd be charging up. And that's really the difference. It's where you draw your energy from. So if you draw your energy from being with people, like I would assume you might, you know, you're extroverted. If you draw your energy from, you know, being by yourself, you're introverted. It doesn't mean that you can't sell, market, you know, network, speak from stage. It just means that afterwards you're tired. It's like, it doesn't mean you can't even enjoy it. I mean, for me, when I do interviews like this, I feel like a kid at Disneyland. I have a great time. I have a great conversation. It just means that, you know, I want to lie down afterwards and I get the realism of how exhausted I am.
Okay. Cause that's what I was going to ask you is you have to do this. Like, this is how you promote your book, the work you do. So you're required to do this, but it's only sustainable to a certain point is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I batch these as well. Like, the reason why I have a whole bunch of interviews today is tomorrow I've got creative work to do. And I, you know, if I do a podcast in the morning, there is no creative part of me for hours afterwards. So I have to manage my energy the right way. It doesn't mean that I can't do this. It does mean I have to prepare a lot more. Like, you're a lot more off the cuff than I am. And if you're talking about what I know well, right, then I have no problem talking in detail about these things. And when I go networking, you know, or go out and sell, sometimes something will come up that I'm not prepared for. And, you know, because it's one thing, not 100 things, that if you're prepared for sales or networking in general, I can usually cope really well, or there's something similar that I'll be able to link to. And then because of that, I come across as organic and dynamic. However, when I first started, it required a lot of practice. It required me really thinking about the way a sale would go, or the way a networking event would go, or the way a podcast interview would go. Now, I mean, we were saying just before this, I was like, ask me whatever you want, no problem. But that's because 150 plus interviews in, I just know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Okay. I got you. So, but is there, I use the word spectrum, but I was kind of saying it flippantly, but I also, I'm curious, people can be more introverted. I've also heard this term ambivert.
how does someone determine where they are beyond just the energy? And does that even matter to put ourselves in this category? Does that start to hamper us?
Yeah, so firstly, I think it does matter. And the reason why is, and it really matters for the people, as you would put it, that are further down the introverted spectrum. Yeah. And I would also say further down the extroverted spectrum. Because let's say a lot of extroverts really struggle with things like active listening and empathy. These are, you know, introverted specialities. It's like our advantage. The difference is that what I find is extroverts will realize that they have those disadvantages and they'll go and do training to get better at it. Or HR in an organization will see that they struggle with those things and send them to training. But with introverts, especially the ones that are further down that spectrum, it's like, oh, they're an introvert. They're never going to be able to do that. So, you know, we just have to deal with that. Or, you know, the amazing amount of times I've seen people that have just accepted subpar results in their sales team, in their senior leaders, just because they're introverts and they're never going to be able to succeed. And it's because there's this gift of gab barrier. It's like this self-imposed wall that we put on ourselves, and then we put it on everybody else. And it's ridiculous. I mean, Zig Ziglar, probably the most well-known speaker and trainer in the sales world, was an introvert. Jeb Blunt is an introvert. Ivan Meisler, the founder of BNI, also an introvert. Yet we just say, oh, no, that person is good on stage. That person's a good salesperson. They must be extroverted. It's just, it's not true.
Interesting. It's funny, as you're sharing this too, I would qualify myself slight slant toward introvert, which externally people are like, but you like to be on stage. You like to be so funny. You try to be funny, which I'm goofy maybe at best. But when it comes to the energy source, I get more energy out of project time being by myself. Well, your book, The Introvert's Edge, well, that's your pinnacle book. That was your first book. What is the edge? Like, what advantage do, if I can put myself in the introvert category, what do we have that others don't necessarily?
Yeah, so I think that our advantage actually, so I always say, you know, our struggles in the past really seed the success of our future. And, you know, introverts without a sales system, I mean, let's face it, we kind of suck at selling. But with a system, we can be amazing at it and we get better and better. So, you know, an extrovert, they love to wing it. And they can succeed pretty well at winging it, but every day they're winging it. So they're just as bad or just as good as they were yesterday.
Right, there's no repeatability.
Exactly. I mean, everything you talk about in all of your books is, you know, you've got to have systems and ways of looking at things. Well, for me, it was like, well, with this world of sales, why is it that everyone says you can either do it or you can't? Well, the truth is an introvert can do it, but what they have to do is gravitate to a regimented system. Now, the focus of a system, just like anything else, it feels cumbersome and difficult at the start, but over time it starts to feel comfortable. And then you can say, okay, we've now got this system. Now we want to put continuous improvement, right? We want to focus on improving little elements, but we'll improve one thing at a time so that we know what's blowing up in our face if it goes wrong. So the great thing is that because introverts are terrible at selling without a system, we kind of hold on to it for dear life. And because of that, we get better and better. We become obsessed with the system. And that's a huge advantage because at the start, we may struggle, but then eventually the extroverts were like, oh, those guys, they're always causing issues. They misexplain things to clients. Why? Because they're explaining it differently every time. Where an introvert explains it exactly the same. And that's why we do so well. And I mean, this isn't new stuff. Brian Tracy talks about, I mean, he's definitely an extrovert, by the way, but he talks about the top 10% of all sales performers have a planned presentation. Well, if you think about planning, I mean, that is an introvert's edge, right? We love to plan, we love to prepare. And because of those abilities, that allows us, especially if we've got the right system, to leverage our empathy, our ability to actively listen. And then, of course, we follow a system. So those are real advantages that we have. So, but I mean, he says the bottom 80%, they just say whatever comes out of their mouth. And if you think about it, if an introvert just says whatever comes out of their mouth compared to an extrovert, we're probably not going to do as well. I mean, we get stuck in our head a lot of the times in the moments past, or we just, you know, we get too much into the jargon and the detail, especially in industries like technology and finance. A lot of times, especially when we're talking about highly complex products or services, a lot of times we think it's our job to explain all of these things to a client at a networking event, or when we're selling, or when we're just, you know, meeting with people casually, and it's just overwhelming for people. So introverts need to learn how to make that information more palatable, and they can, you know, they can come up with stories, especially if they know their niche, they can come up with stories that easily explain it while embedding them as the only logical choice. And then all of a sudden, they're turning off the fire hose and they're instantly more relatable to the client.
Now I can see why that 150 podcast serves you, right? So you start building this routine and process. Does it need to be documented to get the edge? Or is this something that just by the nature of being an introvert, we start building the systems in our mind?
Yeah, so the answer is both. And originally, and the reason why I would say both is because if I'm a sole trader, I just work for myself. I am my salesperson, right? So because of that, yes, it is something that I can do in my head. However, you know, I would prefer to practice it and practice it and make sure I'm following the same process. So I do prefer to document it down. And the reason for that is, especially when you're learning, like for me now, it's something that I do in my head. I'm like, okay, Mike's got this whole new focus on his interview, so he's going to take me probably well off left field. But here are the real things that I plan out what things I do want to talk about. But because I've done so many interviews and been asked so many, you know, strange and deviating questions, I know how to handle those as well. But when I first started, I would study the flow of the interviews that would come up and what I was going to answer for each one. And, you know, I'd start off, you know, almost scripting out what I was going to say so I could practice.
Yeah.
Then I went to, okay, I'll just dot point out what I'm going to say, you know, because now I'm getting better at it and I've got some things, some anchor points to leverage. And now I'm much more natural and comfortable. But a lot of the things I'm talking about are things I've talked about many times before, but not in the same interviews, perhaps.
Right.
But really what it comes down to is, especially when you're selling, is always, I mean, especially most introverts never want to be selling their entire life, right? Their dream is that they'll put on a salesperson or create an automatic sales process online. Sure. So they never have to sell. So for me, I always start with that in mind. And for me, any introvert that thinks they can just hire a salesperson, I know accountants are like this. They're like, I just want to hire a salesperson and have them go out and sell.
The rainmaker.
Yeah, exactly. The problem is that means you're going to hire a $150,000 person and they're going to give you every excuse in the book for the next 6 months while you continue to pay them. And you'll buy all these excuses because you think sales is hard. And 6 months will go by, you pay them $75,000 and you've got nothing out of it. So yeah, the thing that you need to do is learn how to sell, learn how to network yourself, make sure you get everything that you say documented, and then you'll hand it to a salesperson. And they'll say, oh no, it'd be better if I sell it my way. That's them saying, I don't want to do that. That sounds like a lot of work. But, you know, think back to every movie you've ever watched, right? They're all reading from a script, right? They sound authentic because they've practiced. So I always say, sure, eventually you'll be able to do whatever you want. But first, why don't you learn this? Once you prove to me you know this and you can do it well, then if you want to change things afterwards, we can talk about it. Of course, once they've learned it, they think it's amazing and their closure rate's so high, they never want to change it. So the goal for introverts, if you want to get yourself out of the sales process, just like if you want to get yourself out of administration, you have to create, you know, a process that other people can follow to the letter, and that brings, it gets rid of all the variability and it makes sure that you have the highest statistical chance of success every single time.
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about salespeople. I found that good salespeople are good at about one sale every 6 months, which is selling their reason to have that job, and then they get fired and they sell the next job. Great salespeople can actually sell. This may be a strange and deviating question, because you said sometimes you get asked strange and deviated questions, which may throw you off totally, but what's like one of the strangest, most deviating questions you've gotten? Is it this one?
You know, it's interesting. I get people ask me, well, the hardest question I've ever found to answer is, you know, tell me something about yourself no one knows. And I'm like, have you not seen any of my presentations? I like put photos of myself with terrible acne up on stage so that people can see me as I was. They're like, with me, I don't hold back, because the problem is, I mean, you and I are having this conversation and you've just outed yourself as an introvert. And I talk about the fact that I'm an introvert, but let's face it, if you saw us in general day to day, people would be like, oh, that guy, it's easy for him. It's not easy for me. So
because of that,
I give away everything. But, you know, I get asked random questions like, you know, if you were a color, what would you be? And I'm like, what has that got to do with like a podcast interview? And it's like, oh, you know, it's one of these mood kind of podcasts. And I'm like, okay, well, I clearly should have listened to that podcast. But, you know, when I started, I listened to every single episode. I listened to one or two episodes before I would do a podcast. Now, you know, I've got back-to-back interviews. You know, if it's a big one, I'll listen to one or two just to get the idea of the flow. But a lot of the smaller ones, I just don't have the time to do it. But once you get the system down, it's fine. But yeah, the hardest questions I always get asked is, you know, well, some weird questions like what you just, what I just said.
Yeah.
But the biggest questions that I get asked is, tell me something that, you know, no, I haven't told anyone, that you haven't told anyone before. And when you've done it.
Oh, I hate that question. That's called lazy interviewing.
Yeah.
So what's one question you've been asked before? I'm kidding. Okay.
Well, I actually had to come up with one recently. So
what?
Yeah. So for, and I'm not gonna say the name of the podcast, but there's one of these, you know, top 10 podcasts in the world. And, you know, the guy's a good friend of mine, but I had to still fill out his interview form. And he's like, "What's one thing you've never told before?" And I had to really think. And I'm like, "Well, I've never actually told this story. I've written it in the book, but you asked me what story."
Oh, there you go.
So I've written about it in the book, but, you know, what was interesting, and this is actually a really cool story. So now, you know, I've already submitted the application, so it won't be a story I haven't told before after this. But the when I wrote this book, The Introvert's Edge, what was interesting was I put it out there, and I sent it, you know, one of the people that picked up the book was somebody that actually worked with me on Small Business Festival, which is a conference I run to put out free events all across the country for small business owners. And he had it on the coffee table, and his son, who's super introverted, I'm talking, you know, hoodie over, looks at the shoes the whole time. He picked up the book, and he's always been really interested in business books. So he read it and he went, "Wow, if you can systemize a sale, maybe I can systemize the process of making friends."
Oh, interesting.
So he was in primary school and also middle school here in America. He was in middle school, and he walked around with my book for like a month. And he would start the process of having dialogue. Well, fast forward about 3 months, the hoodie's off, he's got friends, there's a girl in the picture, and his life is different. He's now one of the popular kids. And it was all because what he realized is that conversational dialogues went the same way. So what happened is, you know, we had a whole bunch of people say, "Matt, you know, it's great systemizing the sales process. Now I'm closing more leads, but I need more leads to come in so that I can sell to them. So can you have a book on networking?" And, you know, for people that don't know my backstory, I mean, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader in late high school. So writing for me is not fun. I literally write things out and then listen to it with a robot voice so I can hear it. I mean, it's why my books all sound so conversational, because if it doesn't, I feel like it's like nails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because of this story with him, I was like, wow, if this kid can really see the fact that you can systemize making friends, I need to do more of these. And, you know, the obviously the next natural trajectory was we need to do one on networking. So that's why we bought this one out. But also, I mean, I moved from Australia to the United States and didn't know anyone, and then built a really good network really quickly. So people have always asked me how I did that. So it was a great opportunity to really decode that and show people.
Do you plan on doing more books after the Introvert's Edge to Networking? Are you going to do more books beyond that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's going to be a series. So there'll be a ton of books that'll come off the back of it. But that being said, you know, for me, I mean, my mission is really about helping introverts realize that they're not second-class citizens. Their just path to success is different to that of an extrovert.
Yeah.
And that extends well beyond just what I can teach. So at the moment, I mean, the first book, let's face it, there wasn't really that many books on introversion, and most of the books on introversion focused on, "Poor you, you're an introvert. Let me show you how to survive in an extroverted world." Yeah. So that's why the book was called The Introvert's Edge. It was like, forget that. Let me show you how to dominate in an introverted world. Yeah. But the second book, you know, is now really looking at much more of a general topic like networking. But I mean, let's face it. I mean, there's only a certain amount of topics that I can write and have a real high level approach to. So there will be a few more that I will write, but I want the mission to extend well beyond me. So that's why on my Introvert's Edge podcast, I'm always interviewing what I call Titan introverts about, you know, what their struggles were and how they became successful, what systems they had and what they consider their Introvert's Edge. But eventually the books will open up to every topic under the sun that I can think of that would be considered an extroverted arena. So we'll open up to leadership, to public speaking, probably to things like parenting, to making friends, to dating perhaps. You know, I want to see this become a much bigger topic than what I would consider myself a master in, and really open it up to other authors that will still That's open nice. To the storytelling format, but share it with the world.
So smart. I did that with Profit First. There's Profit First. We did for verticals, so for contractors, for e-commerce providers. Very smart strategy. So let me ask you about your own personal life. So you were, and a lot of people may not know this, you were a door-to-door salesperson. It's funny because you're an introvert. You don't want to be out there networking. And it sounded like it was a pretty tough journey, but you stuck through it. Tell me a little bit about that story.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know the story well. There's no way I should be where I am today, like none. I mean, I was, and this is what I talk about in a lot of my stage presentations is, you know, I'll tell a few stories because I think stories are a great way to educate and inspire. Because I mean, there's science behind that as well. But the thing that, you know, most people get to about two-thirds of my presentation, you can see all the introverts in the room going, oh, it's easy for you though. But, you know, for me, it's difficult. You know, I'm an introvert, I can't do it. So I talk about, you know, my story of how I got to where I am. And I mean, yeah, for me, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader. I actually had the glasses for the people that are watching this on your YouTube channel. But I got diagnosed with this thing called Erlen syndrome, which means I put on a pair of funny colored lenses and miraculously, I
can come on. Let's see what it looks like.
You're going to get this for a second, right? I do this on power on presentations as well, right?
Oh, there you go. So
now they've actually changed from like a dark gray to the blue ones that you see now over time. But what was happening is I put on these pair of glasses and yeah, I can learn to read, but I can't learn, like I can't read like everyone else at my year. I've got to start the process of learning. Like that's when my development began. So here I was with, you know, the reading speed issues. I've been used to being the slow kid. I had horrible acne. And, you know, braces back then. And now I've got to put on funny colored lenses. So it wasn't really big for my confidence. So I got into the top 20% of the state in Victoria, Australia. But my family could see I was exhausted. There was just, I had nothing left in the tank. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. So we just agreed I'd spend a year finding myself. But I mean, what happened was I took a job at a real estate agency, not in the front office, don't worry, in the back office doing data entry. And I had this look on my face, like, don't speak to me. I'm here to find myself, right?
Right.
And 3 weeks into that job, my boss comes up to me and he's like, Matt, I'm so sorry. We just found out they're closing down this office. You're out of a job. So this is Australia, right? I mean, everyone knows everything's, you know, backwards in Australia, right? So summer and Christmas at the same time, we go on holidays from the 20th of December to the 15th or 20th of January. I mean, no one's hiring. If you're a small business, especially, you're like, no, thank you. I'm about to take a month off. I don't want to carry another wage for a month long break. So the only jobs I could find in the paper were these three jobs and they're all commission only sales roles. And I mean, as you can imagine, that was terrifying to me. But the only thing that was worse was going home to tell my father, who broke his back 80 hours a week, that's it, I'm just out of a job and I'm going to sit and watch Oprah for the next year.
Yeah.
So I just went, you know what, I'm going to apply for them anyway. And my confidence was boosted by the fact that I got on the phone to all three and they all gave me an interview. And then I found I got all three jobs. It turns out commission-only jobs just hire everyone.
Right.
What they do. Well, that's it. So my manager, I took a job in door-to-door, direct, you know, business-to-business telecommunications. And the manager on day one, he said, we've got the saying, we throw mud up against the wall and we see what sticks. Which is fun until you're the mud, right? So I was like, okay, so I'm going to learn how to sell here, right? 5 days in, it was all product training. Then they throw me out on a road called Sydney Road in Melbourne, Australia, and they're like, go sell. I'm like, I don't even know what to say. So I take a deep breath. I walk into the first door, and luckily, I was politely told to leave. I mean, the next door, I was less politely told to leave. Then I was sworn at. But my personal favorite was always, "Why don't you go get a real job?"
And I'm like, insult to injury. Yeah.
So I was like, all right. So door after door, this happened until I got to the 93rd door where I made my first sale, and I was ecstatic for about 45 seconds until I had that realization that $70 was great today, but tomorrow I got to do this again, and the next day. So, I mean, I went home and I think a lot of people that are listening right now, we kind of live in this world where, and you know, it's funny, small business, we've got this whole mentality now, we're just going to grind it out. We'll just hustle through it. And that seems to be a good thing. I mean, it's definitely better than quitting, don't get me wrong, which is what 18 of the 20 people in my training group did. But I went, well, no, I mean, hustling it out every day doesn't sound great either. So I went, I'm going to decide that sales is a system like anything else. And I'm going to go away to learn it. Now, again, with my reading speed issues, picking up a Brian Tracy or a Zig Ziglar book, not going to happen. But, you know, what I did do is I went to YouTube and I typed in sales system and all these videos came up. And then I just focused on a system and every day I'd focus on 8 hours practicing, 8 hours at home, you know, learning how to do it. And then I'd go out the next day and put it to work. And literally it went from, you know, 93 doors to 76 to, you know, 41 to 32 to 12 down to 3.
I mean,
really, 6 weeks in, it was only really 6 weeks. Because, I mean, everyone's like, oh, yeah, but it takes too long to learn. 6 weeks in, my manager pulls me into his office. I thought I did something wrong because I was the quiet guy. I just hand my paperwork in downstairs, go upstairs, keep to myself. And literally, he said, Matt, we just printed out the national sales results. You're actually the number one salesperson in the company. I mean, this place had thousands of sales reps, I'm the number one. And it was all because I just focused on everyday system, system, system.
Oh, my gosh. So you were averaging three sales a day, sale every three doors. Did you leave that job ultimately because you were looking for something new, or how did that come to conclusion?
So actually what happened, so I got promoted straight after that, because apparently because you're a good salesperson, you're also a good sales manager.
Oh, mistake, yeah.
So, I mean, we've all seen that. Oh, you're an amazing salesperson. So go and teach those people, especially extroverts, right? Just do what I do. Well, that doesn't
work. Yeah, it's cool.
So I got given a team, all 20 people quit within 24 hours. So
nice.
My goal did not work. So back to YouTube, learned how to manage, and actually got pretty good at it. So I got promoted about 7 times in the space of a year. But what I noticed is every time I got promoted, I would earn less because they give me a little bit more of everybody else, but I was getting promoted so quickly and I got less time to go out and sell. And I went, this is ridiculous. I gotta own the shop. So I decided about 12 months in to go and start my own business. And I started, telecommunications was all I knew back then. And literally, so within the space of 3 years, we became the number one brokership for B2B cell phones in the country, in Australia. Wow. And then fast forward a decade, I mean, I've been responsible for 5 multi-million dollar success stories. That was, you know, just before I turned 30 and I hopped on a plane and came over to closer to your side of the world.
So here's the thing. I think many people, and I'm speaking for myself, but I think many people associate introversion to lack of drive, but I'm hearing that's not true, especially in your story. I mean, introverted and extreme drive, is that a good assessment that introversion, where we get energy, and our drive is not correlated?
Oh, not correlated at all. I mean, let's just say I needed to have drive because the world did not work for me, period. I mean,
there you go.
And because of that, it was like everything was hard for me. So when I struggled at sales, it was just like, oh, this is just the next thing. I've got to, you know, grind it through. But I always went, the way everyone else says to do it doesn't work for me. So therefore, I was always open to finding another path. So that was always a big thing for me. So introverts, I think that we create excuses for ourselves. And I think that's the difference. Like, I mean, let's face it. If you look at really highly introverted career paths, you've got accounting, financial planning, legal, IT. I mean, these are not...
Mortuaries, just adding that in.
I this January, before the whole COVID thing, I was the featured keynote speaker at DED Talks.
DED Talks? Are you kidding
me? DED Talks. You know, it's a play on TED Talks.
Of course. No, I get it. That's awesome. I didn't know it existed.
Yeah. So it's put on by the National Association of Cemeteries and Crematoriums.
God, I love those people.
Right? But they're all small businesses, right? So they asked me if I could speak because when I first got into speaking, one of my first big keynotes was the Order of the Golden Rule. And I went, well, I'll take what's coming. And the Order of the Golden Rule was for a group of kids that were taking over their parents' cemetery businesses funeral parlor businesses and how they could get ready. So I did my research. Like, funnily enough, a lot of speakers don't research what they're doing, but I did my research before I went in and I created this almost like, you know, pitch the boss kind of thing with their parents. And, you know, I built a keynote around it. It was such an interactive thing. I got this reputation as the guy to hire in the funeral parlor and cemetery industry. So I still get invited to go and speak about
it. That is actually funny. It's ironic. It's a little bit ironic.
Well, I love doing it, but yes, you're right. It's a very introverted, you know, industry. Data analytics is another one. Actually, custom home building is another one. I have a ton of custom home builder clients because the good ones, especially the ones that do the multi-million dollar builds, you know, they had to really understand building. They went deeper. And because of that, that's that analytical mind. So I wouldn't say, you know, introverts aren't willing to do the hustle. What I would say is introverts are very willing to do the hustle if they can see a path where success is possible. And I think that's the difference. Extroverts know that they can succeed at these things. So they're willing to do the grunt work. But can you imagine knowing that you're likely going to fail? Why would you put in the effort? And that's literally what introverts do to themselves. They say, well, I can't sell, I can't network. So I just have to accept the fact that I'm going to have subpar performance in my sales abilities. And that sucks because if you're a business owner, that means you can't live a life that revolves around you, your family, and your life because you're always going to have to put twice as much work in than the extroverts. And it's also not true. So the fact that people believe this to be true is why, you know, I put so much energy into these podcasts because it's really the only way I can help. I mean, even if people don't buy my books, you know, it's not about that. It's really about them understanding that as introverts, their path to success is just different. And when they embrace that, they can really start looking for the paths that get themselves to the outcomes that they truly want for themselves in their personal life and in their careers.
I really like that. You know, I think extroverts and it translates in some cases to overconfidence. So therefore there's a lack of preparation. When we're hearing from introverts, it's a, in some cases, a lack of confidence, which then results in more preparation. So that balances it out, right? So maybe the extrovert is kind of like the rabbit out of the race, but then the introvert's more the turtle. It has the confidence and it doesn't stop. Absolutely. I want to talk about the introvert's edge to networking specifically. So is there a couple of hacks, tricks that you can give us introverts on how to network from the book?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we focus on two, I mean, the first one, I would really say the biggest problem that introverts have, I mean, it extends well past, like an extrovert has this problem as well, but their big buoyant personality gets them around it. But for an introvert, you know, it's the problem of when people ask us what we do. I mean, okay. You know, what is it that you do, Mark? What is it that you do, Matt? And it's all of a sudden, well, I'm a business coach or I'm an accountant, and people go, oh, I've got one of those. Now that's awkward. What do I say to that? I mean, my first experience when I moved to the US before I figured out how to network the right way, because all my network in Australia was because of my success in business. When I got here and I decided that I wanted to have more of a personal brand teaching people sales and marketing, I went, I'm a sales trainer. And then he went, I had a really bad experience with a sales trainer. And he then explained the story about how that person was just like one step above a scam artist. And that's not how he's looking at me. I'm like, oh, that's terrible. Oh, we could hit a winner. And they're like, oh, I've been dying to hire a coach. How much do you cost? Well, now we've got to talk about price. Like, we've just met, right? Yeah. It's still not positive. So the thing that introverts especially need to do is change that balance. And what I suggest is creating what I call a unified message. So, you know, I'll give an example. I mean, when I worked with a girl called Whitney, she, you know, when she came to me, I mean, she was a copywriter.
Was her last name Houston by any chance? I'm just curious.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
No, I would have worked with her though. I wouldn't have turned her down. I don't think she has that problem. I think everybody tries to tell them what they do. But, with Whitney, she came to me and she lived in the old, I mean, COVID's really shifted this for a lot of people now, but this was before COVID when, you know, she literally, she had four clients that were paying her $2,500 a month as copywriters. And she was doing that for the longest time. And then what she found is one client, you know, left her because they got bought out and they started doing the work elsewhere. You know, one got, just went broke. And then so she's down to half her revenue. Then she calls me and, you know, it takes a few months to get booked in with me. But by the time we got working together, she lost another client. So she's down to $2,500 a month. And I mean, that's less than what she was paying the childcare while she worked. So she's like, well, you know, I really need to do something about this. But she explained that her industry now has become, you know, it's just so commoditized. I mean, you know, you've got client people that are in, you know, China willing to do it. You've got people in England, Australia. Instead of just dealing with client, you know, the city of competitors, you're dealing with the world of competitors. And so because of that, people aren't willing to commit to $2,500 subscriptions. They're like, do this piecemeal. And that meant that she was working harder to get the deals. Then she had to invoice. There was no guaranteed income and everything was cheap. So what I suggested is we need to sidestep that battle altogether. So what I noticed is of all the things that she did for all the people that she'd worked with in the past, for some reason I started to notice there was this infinity that she had with people in the health tech space. And I said, what is it about the health tech space that, you know, seems to set you on fire? And she goes, I can't believe that you noticed that. You know, I had a pretty significant heart condition years ago, and it was because of the health technology that was around at the time that without that, I wouldn't be around today. And so she had this passion for health technology. And I said, well, that's terrific. I said, one of the things that I, you know, what do you think the issues are with the people in the health tech space? And she said, well, you know, a lot of them, they have this great technology, but the only way they know to get clients is really to put their message in like advertising, right? They try everything else. It doesn't work. They put their money into ads. And as soon as they finish spending money on ads, the clientele stops. So because of that, they end up in a lot of hardship. I said, okay, so what would you do about it? She said, well, firstly, I have to help them understand that their avatar, they have no idea what that is, right? They're just writing to their golf buddies at home or their VC friends, the people that are already rich, but not the people that actually have the health condition. So I would help them understand who their avatar is. And then after that, what I would do is then help them audit all their content to realize they're writing to their golf buddies or to their friends and family. That's it. And help them realize they need a content tree that speaks directly to that audience. And then I'd set up a distribution plan for them. I said, great, Why don't we then take a step back and say, just do that? I call it a Trojan horse package, but I said, just offer helping them work out what their avatar is, helping them realize mm-hmm. they're writing to that audience, the content tree and the distribution plan. And then at the end of that, hand it back to them and say, you can either hire someone internally, get your team internally to fix it, or you can, you know, they can hire someone, but you come in as an external contractor. I said, but you're never going to get their attention unless you stop calling yourself a copywriter. So I said, why don't we call you the Mission Maven instead?
So
we called her the Mission Maven. She focused just on health tech. We created these powerful stories that allowed her to really get that interest. Well, within the space of 30 days, she got her first client for $3,500 to do that package. But then we had this whole plan that at the end of that, she would say simply, you know, just a simple couple of sentences that said, you know, now we will give you the scope of work. This is what you need. And this is how much I would suggest you you pay. Before she got to the end of that, the guy said, can't you just do it? And she responded, well, normally we only work exclusively with a couple of clients just to stay at the top of our game. And we do this as an independent contractor, but we've really enjoyed working with you. So yes, we can take you on. We do have one more space available, but the price for that would be $10,000 a month. And the client said, yeah, sure.
Oh my God.
Literally 60 days, like literally within the same 60-day period, another client didn't interrupt her, but she said, you know, we don't usually do this. We've just enjoyed working with you so much and we've had an opening. And at the end of that, the client said, sure. Within the space of less than 6 months, she had four of those clients. She was taking in just over $40,000 a month.
Oh my God. Almost 10 times the revenue she lost on a monthly basis.
Absolutely. Yeah. 18 months later, she was acquired by a big digital agency that didn't know how she was getting those clients and saw the Mission Maven as the difference. But here's the thing. When you go into a networking event, you say, I'm the Mission Maven instead of I'm a copywriter. I'm a copywriter. Oh, no, thanks. We've already got one or I'm not interested.
I know what it is.
Absolutely. Mission Maven, it's like your brain has a malfunction. It's like, I don't understand. What exactly is that?
Right.
Now you get the permission from that person to educate them because they asked. And if you do it in a networking event, if you respond with, you know, your passion for helping health tech, say, and then your mission that you're on to help them realize that they're not speaking to their avatar and they're speaking to the wrong demographic, so that's why you do what you do. Let me give you an example, and then you tell a story. And story is key. We can talk further about that if you like. But getting into a story about what makes sense, that gets them to go, wow, that's really interesting. Online, it works exactly the same way. So during COVID, I had one client that literally, you know, she was making no money, and then her husband got cancer 6 months before, and she, you know, immune deficient, so he couldn't go outside. So she's in COVID. She just learned to do it in the networking room. She's in COVID well before COVID even happened. And she had her biggest month, biggest payment month ever digitally, because the same thing applies. If you can't articulate the value of what you provide in 2 minutes when somebody's politely listening, how are you ever going to do it online? So you need to get it right in the networking room. And I mean, my whole focus on networking is to make you amazing inside the room so you never have to go back into one unless you want to.
So, and I should have asked this first about the book, is networking even, I shouldn't say even necessary, is it necessary? Is there any way around it? If I'm an introvert and that gives me terror, is there a way around networking or is it a necessity?
So it's a necessity for a period of time. And well, actually, I should say it's a necessity always in my mind, but you don't have to go into networking rooms to do it always. And actually, I'll give you a good example. So Ryan Dice, I'm not sure if you know, he's the founder of
Digital. I do know Ryan, yeah.
Yeah, so actually, I think he endorsed your last book, actually.
He did. Actually, we just had a call a couple of days ago. We're calling again, just talking about ways of working together. Just the interesting little vignette here, because maybe it speaks into strategy. I heard through the grapevine he was talking about Profit First. So I found out he was a Texas Longhorn fan. So I sent him a football helmet from the college team. He called me. He's like, dude, we just got to talk. And so we've built up this dialogue recently. I wonder if that's part of networking. And I'm not trying to distract from the question I asked you, but I just wonder if there's something there. So back to the question, is networking necessary?
Well, that is networking. I mean, networking
is
being authentic, right? But there are stages to it. So I mean, let's face it, Ryan may not have reached out to you unless you were who you were, right? So there are levels. You have to build some initial social capital. But I mean, Ryan and I are friends. I mean, he spoke at Small Business Festival, my conference in Austin.
Oh, cool.
He's been on my podcast. He's endorsed both of my books. But, you know, Ryan's a great guy. Also, by the way, an introvert. And, you know, he founded Traffic and Conversion Summit, right? It's one of the biggest digital marketing conferences in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Backstory for him is he's terrified to speak on stage only if he has to walk off stage in front of everybody. As long as he's got a back entrance and he can walk in and out, he's totally fine.
Oh, that's funny.
When he gets asked to speak, and you know, if anyone wants him to speak, you know, Ryan's always open to speaking, but you better have a back entrance that he can go in and out of, because he's not worried about speaking from stage. He's worried about being pummeled by people running over him when he gets off stage. that's his thing. But you know, what was interesting is, so I asked Ryan Dice the question, because I mean, let's face it, he's got one of the best digital marketing brands in the world. You know, that's where you go if you want to learn how to digitally market. And I asked him the question. I said, Ryan, you're the guy that teaches people how to make money on the internet. And can I avoid networking? Can I avoid sales? Can I avoid ever speaking to a person? He said, absolutely yes, eventually. The reason why he said eventually is, he said, you know, when he launched his first product, you know, at Traffic and Conversion, they wanted to create like a corporate consulting product. He said from stage, you know, we're going to be launching this product. Here's a basic gist of what it's going to look like. Now, if you want to talk further, I will be standing over there. And he pointed to his stand and he said, I had over 100 conversations in the space of 3 days. It was by far the worst 3 days I've ever had in my life. He said, but by the end of it, he said, I knew exactly what stories worked, what things I could say that would trigger interest, what things I shouldn't say. He said, at the end of that, we wrote the sales scripts for the sales team. We wrote the copy for the website. And we never had to really worry about it. I don't sell the product now. They do. And I feel the same way. So for me, the reason I went to networking events first was because I didn't know what I was doing. And I had to work out a system that made it work for me, but where I could still be my authentic self. And I think, especially if you're selling yourself as a service provider, that's actually a lot tougher, because if they say no, you feel like they're saying no to you, unless it's an external system. And there's a way that you can navigate that system where they feel like you're just giving them so much, but what you're doing is motivating them and inspiring action while helping embed yourself as the only logical choice. But once you've nailed it, I mean, literally I get to the point now where I go to a networking event and to them it's an organic conversation, but for me it feels like Groundhog Day, because I've had that conversation so many times before. By the way, Bill Murray, you know, that eccentric guy,
yes,
in Groundhog Day, he's an introvert as well. Most people
is
don't
he really?
That. He's an introvert himself. So again, it's gets into his own little world. I mean, he's got that quirky, natural, you know, funny personality type that, you know, you have. You seem to be able to do that really well as well. That's not my thing, but you know, you guys seem to share that characteristic. But you know, for me, when I go to networking events, you know, because I've looked at them in a lot of different ways and I've planned out my system and I'm well practiced, and that's the key, right? I'll always get somebody to role play with me before I go when I'm trying a new product or a new service, so that I tell them to be the worst customer period or the worst type of prospect. So when I get in the networking room, it's not that hard. So with strategy and preparation and practice, you can dominate in the networking room. But once you've got that messaging so concise and so clear, you can use it online. I mean, these days, I mean, and I'll be honest with everybody here, you know, every business that I built before I turned 30, they were all bricks and mortar, telemarketing, direct sales. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't even know how to change the word "that" to the word "that" on a website. Terrible. When I moved here, I went, oh, well, if I ever want to visit my family in Australia, I don't want to have 50 staff to worry about. So I'm going to create an online brand that's predominantly leveraged. And so I decided to learn online. And here's what I realized. Most people focus on writing a blog post every week or every day, or a podcast every day or every week, because they're a commoditized entity that is trying to be louder than everybody else. But if you have the right messaging, the right stories, you can use technology, psychology, and strategy to get your ideal clients to chase you, and you can still be contagious with your ideal demographic. I mean, my business now gets in front of so many more people than all of my organizations did before, and it's a lot of ways automated, and it leverages the power of podcasts, you know, like the one we're on right now, that share my stories and my messaging, my social media, all the work that I put out there to drive my ideal clients to really, in a lot of ways, chase me. But if I hadn't have started in the networking room, getting my stories clear, making sure my message resonated, speaking about my passion and mission so that it was well practiced, so that when I get on this, you know, podcast, I'm not, you know, all elbows and knees and fumbling my way through it.
Right.
And it wouldn't have mattered if I got on this podcast. No one would have wanted to come and find out more about me afterwards. So it's about perfecting what you do in the room so that you really don't have to. And also, some of the connections you'll meet in the room are the ones that will introduce you to other people. And that's key. It's not just prospects that are in the room. It's momentum partners, or what I call momentum partners.
Ooh, I like that term.
that will introduce you to other people, right? That's the key. You know, Judy Robinette is a wonderful friend of mine. And, you know, her and I, we introduce each other to podcast hosts all the time so that we can all get on more shows. You know, anytime she's got something that she feels, not because she gets something from me, she just believes in what I do and I in her, and we don't have a formal one-for-one relationship, because that's the wrong mindset to go in with. I talk about, you know, balance sheet mentality, that you shouldn't have that, right? We just both believe in what each other's missions are and try to promote each other. And because of that, you know, we're momentum partners for each other. But then we also have, in networking rooms, you'll meet people like champions, people that are hugely credible, that give credibility to your work because they endorse your books, because they write testimonials for you, because they share your information on podcasts and things like that. Now, those are the real people in the room that are going to get you out of the networking room. Because if you're just there trying to get prospects every time, then yes, that will work. And eventually you'll move it online, but you'll need digital advertising to keep that, you know, that roller coaster going. But if you make enough partners, momentum partners and champions, or if you meet enough and you turn them into great momentum partners and champions, that gets you out of the hamster wheel, because those people put you on podcasts to get your message out in front of so many other people. They get you on TV. They write about what you do in articles in major magazines and online websites. That takes you from the day-to-day, you know, hustle to keep things going to you actually become the authority. I mean, that's what, you know, got me to all these global guru lists and things like that. It was the momentum partners and the champions. The customers and the success I got for my customers was just made it easier for people to go, after they came to my website, go, wow, I really can trust this person.
So unfortunately, we're out of time. I got one last question though, is as an introvert doing lots of podcasts and stuff, it becomes an energy drain. So what's your energy recharger? What are you doing right after this?
So I do a 30-minute, just I'll sit there and watch Netflix or something like that, right? At the, like, this shirt will literally get changed into a hoodie, and sit in the dark room and literally just watch Netflix for 30 minutes and recharge. I do a live stream with all my online academy students in about an hour and a half from today. And, you know, but all I need is about 30 minutes. I can do a big keynote and go straight into another one, that's fine. Or if there's a break, I ask for at least a 30-minute break so I can recharge, and then another 30 minutes so I can get to the next presentation.
So smart.
All I need is 30 minutes. If you know how to control your energy, everything shifts. Like, you know, people ask me at speaking events, oh, do you want to meet up with us for dinner the night before the presentation? And I know that if I do that, my energy levels will be slightly depleted if I've got a morning presentation. So I'll say, hey, that sounds like a great idea, but you've got a lot of things to worry about for the conference. You don't need to worry about me as well. How about we meet the night of the conference?
So smart to manage that.
If you know your energy levels and tell your team members, tell your family. My family know I'm introverted. They let me disappear for an hour at Christmas to recharge, right? My staff know that I'm introverted, so they protect me before any presentation from anything I absolutely don't need to know, so I can stay mentally focused and not worry about things. If your team know, if you know, you can manage it accordingly, and it's not something to be ashamed of. It doesn't mean you're a kid, you know, like I was, a kid with horrible acne that's, you know, doesn't want to talk to anyone. It just means you don't have the strategies, and once you have those, it's really just an energy thing. As soon as you know that, you can manage it correctly.
Matthew Pollard, the author of The Introvert's Edge and the brand new book, The Introvert's Edge to Networking. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, it was my absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so that was a conversation with Matthew Pollard, who kind of caught me off guard. I don't know why I associated energy levels with introversion versus extroversion, expecting that someone that's extroverted would have higher energy outwardly, at least, and someone that's introverted would have lower energy. He just dispelled that by the way he talks.
Yeah, I know, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I had to take it off of fast speed because I was like, I can't keep up.
Yeah.
He spoke faster than me, I think.
Yeah.
Finally.
Agreed.
I've still yet to find someone that can eat faster than me.
Yeah, seriously.
Right?
So you look away for a second. Where'd all your milk go?
I've been out to lunch with Kelsey enough times that she's like, did you get served yet? And I'm like, no, I ate all the food. Thank you for rubbing it in.
It's but remarkable.
That being honestly said, Kelsey, you are probably the slowest eater I know. like we've been at restaurants.
We're not
like
a good eating pair at all.
Not a good eating pair. We've been at restaurants and the waiter is like, oh, would you like to take that home? And Kelsey's like, I haven't even started yet.
I'm just going now.
Only because you finished 10 minutes ago.
I know. It's a horrible eating group. Like, yeah. Next time we go to one of our lunch meetings, we should bring a paste eater.
Yeah.
Both
of us have to come down to their level.
No, I can still eat quickly. You can still eat slowly. It's just an indicator back to the waiter.
the true measure of the meal.
Because when you have two people there, the person that's eating too quickly sets the pace and it's like, oh, is everyone else done? There's only one other person. But if we had a reasonable...
Michael, this is genius. I really
think. I think so. And some of the things at a reasonable speed. And the second they say a word, though, we're like, no. You're not here to talk. You're here to eat.
I think that's part of the problem. Because I'm an introvert, it takes me a long time to like process when we're talking. So when I'm having a conversation at the same time as eating, I can't.
Yeah. Mike, your brain just goes doom, 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 doom.
It doesn't make sense.
It goes with your jaw.
Like five things at one time.
My jaw first.
Your jaw second. And your brain fire at the same exact time.
We need to make an app out of that, Mike. It's a timer. It's a eating.
Eating metronome.
Exactly.
It's an eating metronome. Everybody get in rhythm.
Yeah.
So there was a book I read, and this is true, called Miss Manners from the 70s and 80s. And it was on just etiquette. And one of them was actually pacing eating. And I remember this, that when you're in polite company, which apparently I'm not, when you're in polite company,
rude,
that you observe other people's eating pace and your goal is to everyone complete the meal at the same time. So everyone's pacing off of everybody else because you don't want to be the first finished because then you sped at the table inappropriately and you don't want to be the last person because you're rude. Absolutely rude.
Nice dig, Mike.
Yeah, so you got to pace yourself.
You know what's really funny? If you take etiquette to the nines when it comes to food, there's so many things that are offensive that you would have no idea. Like when you eat soup, you're supposed to scoop away from you.
Yes. And I'm supposed to lay my fork and my knife in a certain pattern on either the left or the right side of the plate. And
the knife is supposed to face inward, the blade facing inward, because if it's outward, that's offensive.
And the thing is on the right side of the, I think the knife's on the right, the fork's on the left.
My husband went to executive school and he came home and he tried to teach me stuff, but none of it really stuck. Still don't know.
So, I use my hands a lot.
The funny thing is in India, that's the way you eat. I was at a dinner in India and you scoop it in your thumb, you shovel it.
Yeah. Even in Thailand, they make sticky rice and they eat sticky rice with everything.
But you only eat with your left hand or your right hand. You only eat with one hand. The other hand's for hygiene. And so it's inappropriate. It's just a lot of stuff going
on. Which is a smart system. You don't get your germs all over.
It's totally smart. It's totally smart. Yeah. So why don't we talk about the subject today? Why does Kelsey eat so slowly?
I know.
So the subject today, though, is introversion. And what's your all's feedback? What do you think?
I love the story of the teen who systemized the process of making friends. I thought that was so cool. Wasn't that cool?
Yes.
And I just like the messaging in general that introverts aren't these sort of second-class citizens. Because I think, at least for me growing up, that's how I felt. And I think within my family dynamics more than anything, but that obviously.
Yeah, it translates outside. Yeah.
But I think in terms of making friends and not being super awkward, it's easier for extroverts because they naturally want to communicate. Whereas I just naturally have all these talks in my own head and don't verbalize them.
Right.
Kelsey, I think you got to lean into your microphone a little more because you're kind of fading.
Okay. To me
was the correlation between drive and introversion. So not just energy, but drive. Introversion doesn't mean less drive by any stretch of the imagination. It's just where we got our energy source from. Solitude, at least the terms I heard him use, was solitude versus community or energy of people.
You know what's Jeremy, interesting? Go ahead, Kels.
I love when he said, like, knowing you were going to fail, why would you put any effort into it? And I think that's super true, at least in my case. If I know I'm not good at sales, so I'm not going to pursue a sales career. I'm not good at anything that requires that kind of thinking quickly on my feet. Like, I can't do that. So I just...
Well, but hold on. he labels himself as an introvert. He pursued a sales career.
Yeah. Right. The process.
So I wonder if that's counter to what you're saying, is he pursued it specifically because that was a weak spot of his to learn and gain knowledge from. At least that was my interpretation.
Exactly. Because he, like, there was a reason for him to do it, right? Because he felt like he didn't have an alternative at that moment in time, but he figured out how to hack his own system to make it, to give him an edge. So he figured out that by creating this system and practicing it and being prepared for all of the anomaly responses and things, he was actually really good. And because he created a system, it's scalable, more so than other salespeople historically or typically are. So my point was that was his point, was we think that way. So a lot of introverts go into these same fields when in reality, if they just kind of hack the system, hack their own brain, they can make any position work for them.
I like that. Jay Shloney.
So yeah, it reminded me, there was a documentary I saw about stand-up comedians. And, you know, I think one of the questions was something similar to, how do you deal with, you know, going on a stage and speaking in front of all these strangers? And the comedian said, I feel more comfortable doing that in front of strangers than I do at a group where it's like a family outing, because I don't care what the strangers think about me, but I care what, you know, the people close to me think about me. And it just kind of made me think of that when Matt was talking about that with the assumptions that are involved with introverts, you know, like in terms of what positions they're good at. And he mentioned something about the stuff that introverts wouldn't be held accountable for, because they're just like, oh, it's okay, you know, they're just an introvert.
I'm curious, if just a quick survey of all of us on the spectrum of extreme introversion to ambivert, I think it was, to extrovert, where do you put yourself? Amy, you're up first.
I'm pretty introverted. I get like completely like he can get painfully shy with people I've known for years and speak to for years. I could find myself not stepping outside my house at a particular time because I just noticed my neighbor stepped out. And I know, it's not like I have a problem with my neighbor at all. I'm just feeling incredibly shy. Like I don't know how to start conversation, or I don't know how to, I'm pretty much there.
I'll tell you a conversation starter. Do you do drugs? Just try that with your neighbor. Do you do drugs?
So, Amy, you're asking me.
You know, you ask your neighbor, like, go, hey, do you do drugs?
That's a She's great not looking for a reason to start a conversation. She's looking for a way to avoid a conversation.
I want to get my car and drive away.
Oh, that's the same thing. Oh, do you do drugs? You'll never have a conversation again. Amy and I went to our high school reunion, and Amy, myself, and there's two other people that helped facilitate it. Amy, no surprise, did so much work to make this an extraordinary event. And you were kind of hiding away, Amy. You weren't, I thought you'd be like socializing with everybody. You were definitely out there. It wasn't like you're sitting in the corner. But I got relief when I saw Amy's hanging out with Amy, like, hey, what's going on?
Like, yeah, I found myself like staying busy, tidying up and like doing that kind of thing rather than socializing. Yeah, I'm not good at it.
Yeah. But I mean, not that you're not good at it. It's not where you draw energy from. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Jay Shloan, where are you? Intro?
I don't know.
Extro?
I think I'd be in the middle. Here's the thing. I don't think that I have problems starting conversations. Like a lot of people say that. Like I remember, you know, this one friend of mine said that they like taking me places because I could just start having a conversation with anybody, which, you know, I try and find common ground and like, oh, okay, yeah. And, you know, I think I'm pretty good at that. But I avoid conversations sometimes when I know that the person talks too much or I'm never going to be able to get away from them.
I understand.
Yeah. So I will purposefully go out of my way to avoid, you know, certain situations. But so I don't know. But then sometimes I feel more comfortable than others. It's weird. I go back and forth.
So I wonder, though, if that is any ability versus an energy source. Like, I wonder if you have the ability to have conversation, but I wonder, where do you get your energy? Do you get energy out of being with people, or do you get more energy in solitude? That's how I heard the difference.
I get my energy from the 10 bags of coffee that were sent to me recently.
Dude, you've never licked your cat so much.
Never. Nope.
It's like it's a hairless cat now. Kels, what do you position yourself as?
I'm definitely more on the introverted scale in terms of energy. Like, it's incredibly draining for me to be, particularly in group situations. Like, one-on-one, I'm good. And when I know the person, it's pretty good. But even with, like, my best friends, when it's a lot of us, it's super draining. And my family, it's really draining for me. But I do feel like as I get older, I'm better at navigating social situations. And I think that I can act like an extrovert in certain situations better. But
skill set. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what about you? I feel like I always think about you in terms of speaking, that the speaking itself gives you energy, but the like mingling is draining.
Right. Right. And you've been to events. Jeremy's been to events with me where I get energy out of sharing because I feel it's productive and of service, but the networking, it drains my energy. Meaning I feel it's an effort, that becomes exhaustible. Like it's, at a certain point, I don't feel compelled to do it. I'm tired from it. But on stage, as I present, the more I go, actually, the more energy I gain. So it's interesting. I wonder, though, if too, because you guys may not know, I have a little bit of a hypomania kind of thing going on, if you didn't figure that one out. I also have a feeling like when a conversation goes too long, I'm like losing productivity time.
Yeah, I know. And you have to, and it's like a line for you. Like, okay, I gotta go.
All right, we're good.
I always get nervous when I talk to Mike. Like, I was in the middle of a story, and all of a sudden, I'm like, I bet this story is way too long. Oh my gosh, I think I probably just slipped over the line. Mike needs to go. And I just like shut my story down and like,
and I'll never forget that, Amy. That was amazing.
And same thing. I think that I'm a slow talker. So sometimes talking to you, I'm like, you're taking too long, Kelsey. He's going to shut it down. Like,
oh, do I really? Yeah. Do I?
No, I am aware that you only have limit. Yeah. You've said that is like in all of your, you know,
I have it profiles, in my little operations manual.
Yeah. Your operations manual. You need like short, concise information.
So it's a compulsion to be productive. And so I think that's what's triggering it is at a certain point, I'm like, I'm losing productivity here because this is how my mind works. The connection's been made. Love you. I get work.
Okay, we're good here. Okay,
so we should just pound now and like walk away. And you're crazy? Like, wait, just as long as we connected, I just need to know I connect with you. You still love me? I love you. Okay,
I need that. Good. I need that.
All right, and then we move on.
And you were like working. You were putting up the garland. The place looks amazing.
Good.
And I'm like, oh, there's Amy. I got to give her a little punch on the shoulder. Like, oh, there's the connection.
Now I'm moving on.
We're good. And now I'm like, I'm back. Yeah, it's a little.
Like sometimes you answer questions before the question's even finished. So I'll be like, hey, Mike, what do you think? You're like, yes, 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 yes. And I'm like, okay.
All right. Yeah, it's
I want to spend a day in your head, Mike. I would love for my brain to work at that speed. I would love to see what that's like.
It's like Sonic.
Maybe, I don't know.
It's like Sonic the Hedgehog, just all day long.
I know no other speed.
It's excellent.
At that time, you said that like sometimes you get the feeling where you just want to like punch somebody for no reason. And sometimes when I'm talking to you, I'm like, he wants to punch me.
Oh, never.
This is one of those times.
I've never felt that way. So here, this is a reality. I thought I ever felt this way. I've been with people and I just had this compulsion. I'm like, oh, what if I just took coffee and just kind of splashed coffee on them like right now? Never with you guys. And I'm being sincere. And I talked to like someone else, like, no, I've never felt that way. And like, I talked to a few people, like, don't you ever want to splash coffee on someone and just end it right there? Like, no. Then I talked to my sister and she's like, oh yeah, I've had that feeling at times.
Yeah. I heard somebody else recently say something like it's unprompted. It's just for random.
Oh, it's random. It's totally, like it's a genetic defect.
I heard my husband say that. And I heard you say that, so I thought it was a testosterone guy thing, but maybe not.
Chris said that?
Chris does say stuff like that. Like, do you ever just want to punch somebody? I don't have a problem with him. I just want to punch them. I just want to punch that guy. And I was like, no, I don't think that's normal. And then you said it, Mike. And then I was like, oh, maybe it's just like a guy testosterone thing. But Jeremy, do you ever have that?
I don't have that.
Okay, so my theory is out the window.
You know what, though? Mike, I will say, so you know how people have tells, like poker tells, you know? Like they do something and it gives away their hand. So with you, sometimes I'll be talking to you and then it's a tell and I can't explain what it is, but I know it when I see it. And then I just immediately in my head, I'm thinking, he's not hearing a word I'm saying right now.
He's checked out.
It's like, yeah, it's just like the blinds come down and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to end this conversation.
Okay, good chat. See you later. Yeah.
No, yeah. Totally true. I wonder what that is. Yeah, totally true. I do hear up to a certain point and chink, it's a stun. And my mind's like, you got to speed up.
Yeah. Got more to do.
It's a form of mania. I told you I was diagnosed. I was diagnosed by my in-laws who are both psychologists who said, oh, you have hypomania, which is hypo is 1 degree under hyper. Hyper is uncontrollable. Hypo, at least as I heard it, is channelable. Mm-hmm. You can channel it.
Yeah.
But there is this, it's a maniacal. Like, I gotta go. I gotta do.
That's crazy. I didn't mean that. That was so rotten.
All right. I know we have the game coming up. I just want to remind people right now, go to theintrovertsedge.com/networking. That's Matthew Pollard's website. He's got some free resources for you, and you're going to discover a phenomenal book. If you feel you're an introvert, you've got the edge. All right. What's the game we got?
That's a nice tagline. I like that. Okay. So here's the thing. I screwed up on the games. I'm adjusting on the fly. All right. So Matthew is Australian. So this is Australian trivia.
Nice, dude. Good link.
Thank you. All right. So what was the first album to sell more than 1 million copies in Australia? Was it Thriller by Michael Jackson, Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, or Whispering Jack by John Farnham?
100 million?
That one. I feel like it's that one. Because would you even know that person?
Well, the funny thing is, I'm like, when he says AC/DC, it's got to be them because they're the most popular Australian band ever. But
I didn't even say AC/DC.
I know. That's what I mean.
But that wasn't even an option.
I was waiting for you.
Oh, man.
Okay. Question number
Does
two.
Does Kylie Minogue Australian?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I missed the question.
And were the Bee Gees Australian?
I think they're English.
I think they're British.
I feel like one of them had a four Australian accent.
Just a high voice.
Was it Robin? Did he have a kind of Australian accent?
They're brothers. It's not like they were born in different
places. I feel like they were like slightly Australian.
wasn't Robin Russian? No.
Saturday Night Live impersonations.
Oh, when they do Barry Gibb. I'm Barry Gibb, man. He gets so pissed. I love it.
Anyway, back to the
game. Who plays Barry Gibb in Saturday Night Live?
Justin Timberlake and then Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon. That's right. It's Jimmy Fallon. I'm Barry Gibb. Like he's got the hair flowing out. All right.
Oh, man.
Okay, are we ready for two?
Yeah,
ready.
In what year did Vegemite appear on Australian supermarket shelves? Was it 1915, 1923, or 1935? All right, ready for the last one?
Yeah.
Okay, nobody answered. What is the national flower of Australia? Is it the blue gum, the banksia, or the golden wattle?
None of those even sound like flowers.
No, I am not familiar.
Okay. Ready for the answers?
Yes.
Okay. So question one, what was the first album to sell more than 1 million copies in Australia? What'd you guys say?
Thriller.
Thriller.
Whispering Jack.
Yeah, thanks for giving that one away, Kelsey. She's like, there's no way anyone would even know who that was.
And I still didn't go with it. I still didn't go with it.
A million copies or 100 million?
1 million. 1 million, yeah.
Oh, I heard 100 million in my own head.
When was that? Listening. Do you know?
Not listening.
No, it doesn't have the year. It doesn't say. I'd have to do some more research.
All right. Well, Kelsey didn't ruin it. She blocked me and Amy out.
Yeah, you guys couldn't answer that. So, question two. What year did Vegemite appear on supermarket shelves in Australia?
1915. 1935. 1923.
Oh,
right, none of us are right. I know it was in response to World War II. I mean, World War I in 1923. Oh. Because the military was deficient of certain vitamins and stuff, so they made Vegemite.
Well, so if you knew, then why'd you say 1915?
Because didn't World War One start in 1911 or something, or 1915? I don't even know when it started.
No, I think it was,
or maybe it was 1920.
I think it was, yeah, like around 1919, 1920.
Could be right, because World War II is 1940. Ah, damn it, I totally messed it up.
Man, you had the
they're still riding horses.
Had the back.
Some of the military still were fighting on horse.
Yeah.
In World War One.
Yeah, World War One was crazy.
What happened to Kelsey? Did she just
guys, guess this. The Bee Gees were born in Redcliffe, Australia.
No. Get out. Kelsey, she knows her stuff. She knows her stuff.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Born with parents.
Wait, were all the members born in Australia?
Yeah, I think so.
That's weird. That's crazy that they wouldn't have the 1 million copies then. I guess, well, it depends on the year. I'd have to look up the year.
Yeah, like that guy could have been super early.
Yeah.
You don't even know who he is.
Interesting.
All right, what's the flower?
The flower. Go ahead. What do you got?
Banksia. The
golden waddle.
Yes, it's the golden waddle.
I am 0 for 0.
It was too predictable. So I was like, oh, it's got to be the
waddle. Yeah, I thought like the Golden Coast golden waddle, right?
Yeah,
you guys are good.
Maybe it like you just
is it the Golden Coast or is it the Gold Coast?
Gold. Or golden. Gold.
Mike, Mike, you have an excuse for every wrong answer, don't you?
I do, right? That's another. All right, my friends. What's your excuse for listening to this entire episode? I want to hear it. Post it. Please post it in your rating and review of this episode. I want to remind you, please subscribe. If you subscribe, you won't miss a single episode. And please spread the word, too, if you feel that's appropriate. Thanks for joining us. I do want to hear questions, too. So email us at askmike@mikemichalowicz.com. Definitely check out Mike Up in Your Business. You can Google it. You'll find us on YouTube. You can see these crazy videos behind the scenes, too. All right. We're done for today. We'll see you guys later.
Bye.